CII presents
an all-new
Alternative Radio.
Alternative Radio.
You are about to receive an invitation from the author of I Am The Witness website. Listen up. Daryl Bradford Smith is inviting you, yes you, to share your view on any topic related to world affairs. You always wanted to voice your opinion. Tonight, you get that chance. Let 150 countries around the globe hear what you have to say. Speak up, speak loudly. Silence is acceptance.
Alternative Radio.
Alternative Radio.
Every Tuesday and Friday at 10 p.m. live on CII.
It's nothing but the best
on CII.
And gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Friday edition. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Today's the 15th day of August, 2008. Wonderful to be back with all you wonderful and interested people. Because I say interested because no one tunes into the French Connection by accident anymore. It is a place where people have come to rely on thought-provoking and actually earth-shaking, in some instances, facts. Historic facts that have been hidden from our view for forever for some people and for hundreds of years for others. But what I've come to discover, ladies and gentlemen, is that there have always been a group of people out there fighting to get these facts heard. People like Ezra Pound or Eustace Mullins or Archibald Maul Ramsey or Nesta Webster even. Or Douglas Reed. A lot of people, Benjamin Friedman. People who knew what was happening. People courageous, because what happened as soon as they opened their mouths to tell others, they were attacked. Some of them were viciously attacked physically. Others were actually killed. Some were ruined financially. Others were imprisoned, like Ezra Pound was put into a mental hospital illegally, and of course he was not in any way mentally ill, but they deemed him so and put him away. So much for trying to get the truth out. We see these kinds of things happening in Germany right now for people trying to speak their minds. They go to jail. Some people like Gerd Rudolph or people like Ernst Zundel and Professor Ferrisson here in France, imprisoned for his free thoughts, free speech. So I have consider myself honored to be continuing the work of these people. I'm a regular person. I'm not given any special gifts in this life aside from an enormous curiosity and a dogged determination. I have an incredible determination, and I really never have been able to accept injustice. It didn't matter if it was happening on the playground when I was a kid, or in society around me, or in a marriage. I had a guy upstairs from me, where I used to live in an apartment, who used to strike his wife quite terribly. And of course, a lot of people in the building heard the same things I did when this was going on. And of course, I was the only person to go and smack on the door and tell this guy that he had to stop doing that, or he would have my attention. And, some people believe that that's intervening in a family issue. I don't think so. I think there are other ways husbands and wives can work out their differences than resorting to a stronger human being beating up a weaker one. But that was me. And I can't stand the idea that we might be taken advantage of. Don't like it. I've always thought that I should have the right to decide my life for myself, because again, I've said this before in broadcast. I think I stated this in the first show with everyone here. You know, being able to make my own decisions means having the right to make my own mistakes. And honestly, ladies and gentlemen, it is from the errors of my ways, the errors in my life, the mistakes I've made, that I've had the greatest lessons. I mean, the kinds of lessons that reach down inside you and change you, the kinds of lessons that have you become introspective or retrospective, having you look back on things. You see, when you have a nanny state or a controlling government or an institution that micromanages your behavior, you're often left off the hook from having responsibility for your own mistakes. And when, you see, to vilify somebody for a growth process in this life, I think is criminal. It's against human nature and against human rights. Now, of course, that certainly doesn't mean we have a right to injure others. I believe in it wholeheartedly that my rights end where someone else's begin. You know, you cannot take actions in this world where you infringe upon other people. It simply put, it's against everything that is kind and generous in this human family to be able to go and disrupt others around you because of your misbehaviors without consequence. Now, you should always have that in mind. But that being said, one of the things that I have appreciated, and it is the good people along the way that make this fight worth fighting. People at CII have been wonderful. I've just had a little repartee with my engineer, great gentleman. I was brought on board here by a wonderful human being that I have admired since the first time we ran into each other in London. Point being, ladies and gentlemen, is there is courage and courageous people all around us. There are honest people all around us. There are loving, caring human people around us that want the best for their children and their families and for the world. They have morals. They have a deep strength, a spiritual strength inside themselves that allows them to show kindness, show weakness, show love to other people. You know, I got to say to you that this strength on this broadcast, on this CII network, on this new outlet that has been afforded me, I am honored to be able to do it. You know, I don't know if fate selects us or if we make our own decisions. Some people believe it is certainly a spiritual decision that's being made, that people fight the way they do in these situations. However we come to our destinies, ladies and gentlemen, it is the honorable people around us that bring the value to the actions we take. So I want to thank everybody at CII. You know, I have people that have been listening to me in the United States and in Canada and Australia and Europe and in the Orient as well for years now. I'm new to the Pan-African audience, but I'm certainly not new to the rest of the world's audiences. And there have been controversies that swirled around me. I've had a partnership that was certainly not very good for me getting the word out. There were a lot of problems with that relationship that it was troubling to many, including myself, especially toward the end when I found out a lot of things I had been believing otherwise about. I found out the truth about things. But it's been a process. It's been a journey. And I am, of course, I'm always looking forward to better days, to better moments in our lives. I would like to not have to think about these problems we face in the world for an entire day, an entire week, an entire vacation, if I could ever raise the money to have a vacation, which I never seem to have enough to do. But that's not the case. But what it is for me is that the journey I've been making and the people I've met in Europe, wonderful people, hardworking, and I learn more about the crimes of world Zionism from my listeners. I learn more about people's natures from the relationships and from the associations I've had fighting this battle. You find out who's in your corner and who isn't. You find out, and I got to be honest with you, sometimes it surprises you who comes out on your side. Sometimes it's a person you never would have expected to be there for you. So I've opened up the phones today, and I'm going to give the number on air here. It is 00-27-11-494-7007. Again, that is 00-27-11-494-7007. And my engineer will be passing you right through. We already have a caller. I don't have your name, but you're up on the air with Daryl Bradford Smith. Who are you speaking to?
Hi, good evening, Daryl. It's Abu Bakr.
Hello, Abu. It's nice to have you, my first caller ever on this network. It's great to have you talking to everybody around the world. What can I talk to you about today?
Sure, yeah. No, it's a pleasure listening to you. And, you know, you're a breath of fresh air on the airways of CII.
Well, you know, I have to tell you that I have been listening more to the CII co-broadcasters. There is a whole lot of people that are aware of these facts in their own right on CII.
Yes.
I feel honored to be fighting this battle among such great company. And, you know, I have a friend, Mohammed Rafig, my first guest I brought on, told me that after he read the lineup, the guest list, I mean the presenters list, he said there's some very, very well-known people in Islam on that channel, Daryl. You know, they're well-known around the world. He said you have no idea how important they are in the community that they serve.
No, definitely.
And I said, well, yeah.
Sure.
Well, he said, the thing about it, he said to me, was, you know, you don't know the company you're in, but you're in great company, and I think you're going to have a lot of success.
Sure.
Do you have a question for me?
Yeah, I've got two questions. Firstly, I'd like to talk, you know, since you're talking about the French connection, you know, during this week we had Nicolas Sarkozy, you know, brokering a ceasefire in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, you know, previously, you know, we had Tony Blair used to be the, you know, poodle of George Bush. And would you say, you know, Nicolas Sarkozy, would he be the sort of the best European ally for the United States? And is he sort of a lapdog to do the dirty work for them? That's one question. And
Let me address that then, and then you hold on to your second one, and I'll get this one for you. Well, let's face facts here. George Bush isn't smart enough to dress himself in the morning.
Okay.
That's a fact. I'm sorry to tell you that, but I mean, this is my supposedly my president. He cheated his way into office. He's a figurehead.
Absolutely.
He does nothing on his own. The people behind him are this the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, APEC. It is people that are very, very wealthy Zionist Jewish controllers that are behind this. You'll find the exact same people and the same network behind Nicolas Sarkozy. So my point is this. The real controllers are neither of these men.
Yes.
They're neither of these men. Go ahead with the second question.
Sure. Okay, and then coming down this closer to South Africa, you know, the recently appointed president of Botswana, President Khama. You know, again, he, you know, there's going to be a SADC summit, you know, for the Southern African Development Committee, community. And, now he, you know, he hasn't been, you know, elected democratically. He was just appointed by the previous president because he was his deputy. And, you know, what influence do you, the same, Zionists, do you think have on Botswana, because there's a huge army base, United States army base in Botswana, and you've got a huge presence of Anglo-American and De Beers in Botswana, and you know, it's like, you know, people trying to throw stones, you know, where they live in glass houses. So, you know, he's sort of objecting to Robert Mugabe, but I mean, he's in the, you know, he's got his own manipulators from the United States. You know, what's your opinion on that?
Well, let me give you my quick take on that, because I do have some knowledge of this. I mean, I go back to the beginning of the last century when Mr. Rothschild and Mr. Oppenheimer and Mr. Cecil Rhodes sent in the British Army to subjugate the entire southern tip of Africa because they knew that it was a mineral-rich area, and they displaced farmers. They even used manipulative laws to force Africans into the mines. And now what we've got here is other mineral-rich areas around Botswana, including including Zimbabwe, where Mugabe is. And what Mugabe's doing basically right now is the job that the Boer War did. He's depopulating the outskirts of his country. All of the new mining regions are going to be in these areas. I mean, South Africa, as you know, their mining yields are starting to slip a little bit. There's lower yields coming out of the gold mines. There's lower yields in many of the mines. So they're looking at moving their equipment around this area into different places, and they need to politically control them. And so, of course, yes, they are putting their puppets back into place in these areas as well. There's never been any freedom of choice in either America or in your country for hundreds of years. The fact is, they control both sides of every election in any place that you go.
Sure. Quite right, yeah. And then, sorry, last question I'll just add on is, you know, the stock exchanges, you know, throughout the world, you know, what sort of influence do, you know, multinationals have in, you know, monopolizing, you know, markets and, you know, adding to the misery of people by exploiting, you know, the people through multinational companies?
Well, what we know about this latest World Trade talks and the Doha round and everything, what they did was they got rid of barriers to countries so that people could no longer grow a home economy in any kind of product. In other words, let's say South Africa wanted to become proficient in our agriculture. Their industry would never get off the ground because it would be constantly bombarded by exports, by imports to the economy, and your farming regions would never grow, and you would never be able to become self-sufficient. You can use that same analogy in every kind of produced item. What's happening today is these multinational companies are going to the marketplace to build their items in the cheapest area they can find. Sometimes it's in Indonesia, sometimes it's in Vietnam, sometimes China, sometimes Malaysia, sometimes South Korea, sometimes India. But it certainly is never going to be any qualitative production in Europe or America again. These multinational companies have no allegiance to their home countries, and anyone who thinks they do is off their rocker. If the RAND Corporation from your country's area wants to make a product or a service viable, they are certainly going to look anywhere in the world they can get the best deal. And that doesn't happen, if it doesn't happen to be in Durban or in Pretoria or wherever else that they're looking, it'll be wherever they get it cheapest. And this lack of loyalty to the home country is one of the reasons why we're finding the destruction of the middle class taking place.
Sure.
Yeah.
And sorry, just add on a further question. The what influence do interest rates play both in the stock markets and, like, for instance, locally in South Africa? I mean, with relative to inflation in sort of suppressing the poor people by raising interest rates. You know, do you think it's a tool used to control economies?
Interest rates are a interest. This is a complicated issue because what you've got in South Africa is a rather aggressive inflation rate, as the world does right now, and the South African economy has been saddled with a pretty high interest rate by world standards. But basically, fiat currencies, which South Africa's rand is a fiat currency, are basically built on debt. They're not built on savings of the nation. They're not built on what a country needs to grow. In other words, they're not printing the right amount of money for your country to have stable currency and stable growth. What they're doing is printing money, debasing the currency, allowing interest rates to sap off more of the money from the middle class and the poorer classes, thus making the ultimate wage to the worker lower, at the same time balancing books through this process. So It is certainly a way to scam money off of the public, is what it is. And I hope that answers it in a rough sense. I think I've just had a blip in my ear. Is my engineer still with me?
Hello? Hello?
My name is Daryl Bradford. Hi, Amina. about getting cut off. You know, sometimes we have problems going from the South African center all the way up here to France, but it's great to take your call. Do you have a question?
No problem, Mr. Darrell. Thanks for being on with us tonight. We appreciate it very much, and justice is what Islam is for. Mr. Bush and Mr. Blair, actually, I find the time has to actually come when people stand up and actually have them also sentenced, just as they have had Saddam sentenced to death. I think they also need to be punished. And the thing is with me, I believe that not all Jews are bad. It's only when the Jews go sour when it actually is bad.
Well, I agree that not all Jews are involved, and I certainly have always been a proponent of blaming the right people, because, you know, if someone's not involved in a crime or someone is supporting a criminal organization without knowing it, our job is to inform them of what these people are doing so they can stop supporting them. However, when you start talking about a Talmudic tradition, you have to understand that the Talmud does not believe we are human beings. They state in their documents that we are less than human, we are similar to cattle. And so they come from that premise, we're already talking about a very racist doctrine. And so anybody who's adhering very tightly to a Talmudic tradition is a dangerous person ideologically, because their belief system is that I'm less than human. And this kind of crazy belief system is dangerous for all of us. However, people are entitled to their own opinions, but when they start acting on those opinions, it becomes criminal. And so that's my belief. If they're acting on that belief system, then we have to stop them. And truly, Zionists are acting against us in that way.
And I think it's only because the Palestinians, the Iraqis, most of them, it's because they are Muslims, it's a majority Muslims, that's why they're actually invading and doing what they are doing, killing innocent people and taking them off their own lands and refusing them their right to their own lands because they are Muslims. And the Prophet, peace be upon him, has actually said that even if they put the sun in my right hand and the moon in my left hand to leave this religion, it will never ever happen. And we as Muslims all believe that it can never ever happen.
Thanks for
your time, and we appreciate it. May the Almighty bless you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You know, one of the things that I've learned over time here is that there are a lot of reasons why these people have done what they are doing in both Iraq, or what they're trying to do in Iran, or what they've done in Egypt and the Sinai and all these areas, and around the world. What they've done to the United States is equally horrific. What that is about, really, is power. And what they discovered was that they could take the Christian world, lie to it, and turn it against Islam by the lies. Because they control the organs of the press, they control the media, they control the book publishing companies, they control the movies and films and television networks around the world, that they could tell a lie long enough and hard enough, and the result would be that Christianity and Islam would become enemies of each other. And this is exactly what they have been able to do, and they are standing back watching as we, Western countries, are attacking Islamic countries on a lie. And what's happening, what I'm trying to do is point out this lie and make sure that people know who's been propagating it and who's making these horrible statements about both Christianity and Islam that are not true. And that's been my goal. We never are certain, ladies and gentlemen, on the outcome of problems, how they're going to happen. I'm certain someday, one day, these people will be defeated. Whether it'll happen in my lifetime or it'll happen in a subsequent period after that, maybe my children's or my grandchildren's lifetime, is not up to me. But all I can do is try and grow a message, grow a truth, and allow that truth to work its magic in people's lives, because the truth is a magic unlike any other, ladies and gentlemen. When once you know the truth, you are freed from deception. Abdullah, are you with me?
I'm with you, Daryl.
What kind of question you got tonight for me, Abdullah?
Daryl, first of all, I need to compliment you on the wonderful work you're doing. You're a very courageous man. I think you deserve all the honors of the world. You know, you are truthful and immaterial from which religion you are, you know. But if you are on the side of truth, then I think you got the majority of the Muslims with you, because Muslims normally don't look for trouble, you know. Troubles come at the doorsteps, and, you know, we have to face the problems that others cause for us.
Yeah.
You know, I am truly amazed at the stuff that you are pushing out to us, you know. It's really, really it's an eye-opener. I went onto the net and I checked on your website. It's got an enormous amount of stuff that people can benefit from.
Yeah,
I must thank you for the wonderful work that you are doing. You know, there's just one or two questions I need to ask you, Daryl, if you don't mind. You know, America has got economic hitmen. I want you to comment on that, because I think many of us are not aware of what the hitmen are. And the second thing I want you to comment on is the Muslim so-called leaders, you know, that are Zionists.
Yeah. Well, okay. The economic hitmen, if you will, are the aggressive, wolf-like predators that go out into the world and they implode local businesses in many cases. For example, let's say Procter & Gamble wants to take over the soap industry in southern Africa, and you've got a competing business down there. What will happen is these people are willing to do anything to destroy that small company. They might put a poison inside the soap powder, or they might do something financial with the company's stock, or they might, whatever it takes, so that when that company finally fails as a result of what these people do, they're left with the monopoly. Now multiply that around the world and multiply it by hundreds of Zionist-controlled companies, and what you have found over the last 100 years is that almost every business of size in this whole planet is controlled by these people. They have used aggressive tactics to destroy any competition anywhere in the world. Economic terrorists is what they are. The other question is, I forgot what that second question is. Give me a second here.
I'm just reminding you again. It's about the Zionist Muslim, so-called Muslim leaders that we have leading our Islamic countries.
Yes, King Abdullah comes to mind immediately. This guy is a Western educated. His father was a Freemason. Freemasonry, if you will recall from your studies or from what I've told you before, is an offshoot of the Grand Orient Lodge in Paris, controlled exclusively by Jewish interests, and it has a tradition of the Kabbalah. And anybody out there that knows anything about Kabbalism knows that it is a mysticism that the Jews have come up with that is, many believe, satanic. It is certainly a virulent form of Judaism, but it has found its way into some of the leadership of Islam. You'll also note that Saddam Hussein, back in the early 80s, before he went into Iraq and had a coup d'etat and took over the country, was in the pocket of the CIA. And the CIA is exclusively a hit team, a criminal gang for this this group that we have been talking about. They do the bidding for the United States, Israel, and world bankers. So, again, Saddam Hussein is one of them. You know, the Shah, before he was deposed. Elements within the Iranian government today who still do business with Israel, selling them oil and buying military parts from them, and then turning around and getting on television and saying how much they hate each other. If you remember the Iran-Contra affair, where
yes,
America was doing business with the Iranians, and on TV they were hating each other. The fact of the matter is that there are elements within almost every government in Islam that are not acting in the best interest of their people. Of course, Saudi Arabia comes to mind as well. This grassroots fight that we have growing here needs to come from the people up. We have to become empowered by truth, so that we can turn to our leadership and say, we are tired of what you've been doing, and we want it to stop now. And this kind of approach is going to take a whole lot more people understanding these facts.
Daryl, can I just say one more thing?
Yes, you may.
You know, just previous to your program now, we were discussing the Hajj. I'm sure you know what the Hajj is about.
Yes, I
And we're talking about the exorbitant fares and the fees and the charges that we are going to be faced now.
Yep.
And this all stems from, I think, economic hitmen, you know. What I think happened, Daryl, is that 5 years ago, America put in a master plan, you know, as to how they could change, you know, Mecca and Medina, you know, and modernize it. And consequent to that, you know, they demolished something like anything like between 1,500 and 6,000 hotels. Now, you got about 2 or 3 million people going there for Hajj. And if you are short of 6,000 hotels, what happens?
There's no place to sleep.
And in any event, when those new hotels are built, are we going to be charged the old prices?
Probably not. You know, Saudi Arabia's relationship with Israel and the fact that it never has stood up against this criminal group, and the fact that they're in working hand in hand with the American government and governments around the world, what they're basically about enriching themselves. You can't have a government that has castles and houses in Vail, Colorado, and in the South Pacific, and while people in their own country are having trouble, you know, getting educated or eating, or I mean, you know, there's so much suffering in parts of the Muslim world, worldwide. You can go into Kashmir, or you can go into Pakistan, to Lahore, or wherever you'd like to go, and you find people in Islam who need help. But these people in Saudi Arabia are spending hundreds of billions of dollars ingratiating themselves. This is certainly not an Islamic government. It's certainly not the way Islam is supposed to work. And so what it tells me is their actions speak about who they are. Not only that, we have discovered that their whole kingdom's basis is based upon a lie. They are, from what my research shows me, the royal family of Saudi Arabia comes from Jewish roots.